David Coleman, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ryan.
Welcome to our van. Do you like our caravan of love?
Yeah, it's my second time in it now. It's very exciting.
It's different. I wonder where she's
Do you know what I was actually impressed by? No. It is really well soundproofed once you close the door and you're in this bit of it.
No. What we did was we bought those windows, these really big, thick windows. We got them they came off the back of a lorry there in Meath. And they're working a treat for us, as you can see.
See the kind of velour?
On the seat.
That's very impressive.
Now. I know. No, we knew you were
compared to the creaky chairs in the old normal studio.
Yeah. There you go. Oh, lads, that's the Fire Brigade. Dublin Fire Brigade passing by with their coffees, just having a quick hello. There's not. I think everything's safe. They were just having a little...
That lady finished her call. And
look at her. She's not there now at the moment, but you see that the middle apartment. That's okay. Where she's. She came out to do her call, then she went in, then she was taking a picture, and now she's gone back in. Don't know why she isn't at work. She looked like somebody who was kind of going to work or going
Lucky
to an apartment.
Person who's not at work.
But she could be off. David, will we get down to business? I mean, I know it's a bit odd because we're here in this fish tank of a thing, but we are in Howth, and it's only appropriate to have all our references to be mildly nautical as we march towards 11 o'clock. And so to our first question. David Coleman, I have a 15-year-old girl who is being socially excluded by her so-called friends. Doing her junior cert this year, has missed around 8 school days already because she hates going to school now. She fears it. No bullying as such, just feeling and being left out. How can I help her to make new friends or get over this phase with her other friends? Which is quite similar to one we did last week or 2 weeks ago, but no harm to address it again.
Yeah, I mean, even when she says, you know, oh, it's not bullying. In some ways it is bullying if it's deliberate exclusion and if it's continuing for a while. And I guess the big thing is for that 15-year-old, she's obviously very distressed by it.
Yeah.
It's obviously a big deal for her. And I just wonder, does the mum know any of the so-called friends' parents? Because that would be the way perhaps to try and help out as a mam, which would be to talk to one of the other mums and just see if there's some issue going on, if there's something that she might, you know, be aware of that might be a problem or whatever. But it's very difficult for the 15-year-old who's been excluded because you can't bypass it. You can't, you know, it's hard to address it unless you actually have, you know, that sense of courage to go up and say, listen, what's the story? Nobody's talking to me. Nobody's including me. I'm not getting the texts. I'm not getting the Facebook updates. I'm not, you know, I don't seem to be included in anything. But it is just very difficult. And really, you know, if possible, maybe the mum might go and talk to the school and see, are they aware of it? Have they noticed a shift in the cliques in the classes or in the year? And beyond that, it's just about talking to her daughter. But look, you are who you are and you haven't changed. But something has changed for your friends. And it does happen in those teenage years, you know, that for various different reasons, teenagers and kids, you know, they move on, they change friendships, they change allegiances, and sometimes it's kind of tragic, but there's not an awful lot you can do about it. But I think for her, she needs to know that it's not her fault, that there's nothing she's done wrong, and then if possible maybe talk to the school or talk to some of the other parents and see, is it possible to find out, is there some way back into this clique, or something just shifted or changed?
Alright, no, it's a horrible time for mum and dad and daughter. There are no winners in that scenario, but hopefully that advice is of some use to you. David, I'm separated now for 6 years. My 6-year-old has stopped coming for weekend access now for 2 years. He still comes for midweek overnight access when I collect him from school. The problem is, when I call for him at the former family home, it appears he doesn't want to choose between mum and dad, and his mother offers no encouragement.
Yeah, that's very difficult for the dad because you know, it is very hard when children have both their parents, if the parents are separated and they're both there. I mean, children do often feel like they have to choose, and that if they go with one parent, then that means that they like that parent more. What's going to be understood. If they have an issue or a problem, it's very hard to talk critically to one of the other parent either, because you're afraid of losing them. So children do get very stuck in the middle. But that to me sounds like it's an issue with for him and his ex-partner to talk about. They need to resolve that, and they need to either find a neutral venue where it's easy, or find a neutral person, a bit like, you know, the midweek school access where he picks up from school rather goes okay, because, you know, the son obviously doesn't feel any compulsion or worry about kind of going with his dad at that stage, whereas I think it is probably a little bit about leaving his mum that might be more the issue.
Yeah.
So just talk to his ex-partner and see, can he arrange with her that they find some neutral venue or even a neutral person to do that handover, so that you know, his son doesn't feel that sense of
and normalize pressure. It and make don't make it a big thing, and if there's tension between you to hide it and just make it all very, this is what we do and everything's fine, and you just have to go rosy in the garden. You can hate each other if you want after that,
yeah,
but don't let the kids suffer. Isn't that
absolutely
the way?
Yeah, you've got to try and keep it under, you know, between the two of you, not take it out in front of the kids.
Right, okay, good advice all around. Is Sinead there? We'll say hello to Sinead on the phone there. Hi Sinead.
Hi Ryan, good morning.
Good morning to you, and thanks for calling us this morning. You have an 11-year-old. Tell us about her.
Yeah, I have an 11-year-old daughter, and really gets freaked out by the weather, primarily, to the point that she gives herself an upset tummy and headaches. She analyzes the weather, wants to know how long things, you know, it's going to last. It seems a sense of disaster almost, and worries about everything. And I suppose what caused me to ring you today was last night she was awake and worrying and couldn't sort of verbalize what it was. And when I got her out of her, she was worrying about her older sister, who is suffering from the flu at the moment, and heard the ads on the radio that X amount of people die from the flu every year. So she had decided in her head that her sister was going to die. So she just worries about everything.
Yeah. Sinead, it sounds... this is David here, sorry. Hiya.
Good morning.
It sounds really like she's got a generalized anxiety, more even than just, you know, kind of some specific anxiety about the weather. It just happens to be that, you know, predominantly it's the weather that she uses to express this anxiety. So I think, you know, it may be if she's 11 now and that's been going on pretty much for always, then it probably is worth going along to someone, you know, like me, like a psychologist of some kind, to see can you help her learn some skills to reduce that anxiety, because she needs to learn some practical skills to be able to relax herself. But then beyond that, she needs to be able to challenge some of that thinking, because of course, you know, a lot of the stuff that she ends up worrying about is stuff that's ultimately irrational. You know, there's no basis for it. But she needs to, you know, before she can be reassured and before she can actually, you know, act in a rational way, she needs to allow these anxieties that she have to be acknowledged and understood. And she needs to find ways to be able to bring down that anxiety for herself.
Yeah. No, I do try, you know, I do try to say I understand that you're afraid and you're nervous, but I feel it's getting to the point, it's getting worse, really, that she's latching onto all sorts of things to worry about.
Yeah, it sounds like it's extending into lots of other different areas. So definitely time, I'd say, at this stage, Sinead, to go talk to somebody and get some, you know, specific advice for her rather than just even the general advice that I'll give you, you know.
Okay, that's great.
Is that okay for you for now, Sinead, anyway?
No, that's great. Thank you very much. Thanks very much.
Best of luck with it.
Take care. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. That is awful, because there's nothing you can... Like, a child who worries doesn't have a broken arm, you know. You can't just say... We'll put this plaster on and make it better. There's very little you can do to
the big thing though with a lot of anxieties is that, you know, we tend to rush in with solutions and rationalizations and stuff and you know, almost to the point where we're saying, look, don't be silly. You know, that's a ridiculous thing to be worried about. And of course, that doesn't help the anxiety. That just magnifies it, if anything. So before we offer the reassurances or the rationalizations, we have to acknowledge from the child's point of view that this is something that really bothers them. And we have to, you know, normally what parents do is we soothe those feelings for kids. So we kind of go, oh, yeah, that sounds awful. That would be really scary, you know, but at least you're safe here with us. So the rationalization, you know, or the reassurance, you're safe here with us, comes after you've done the acknowledgement, oh, yeah, that is really scary. And that's what children need to do for themselves, which is to acknowledge that it is kind of frightening, it is anxiety provoking, but actually I can cope, or I can deal with it, or I can relax myself, or I don't have to be overwhelmed by this anxiety. So that's what, you know, going to a psychologist and learning some skills might help that girl there.
Another one says, ask David, does he believe that a traumatic event like a freak accident can affect a child a few years later? If so, can anything be done about it? My son, now 12, gets very cross and has quite a bad temper. I get the puberty thing, but I'm wondering about another incident too.
Absolutely, it could. I mean, we know in lots of different situations that traumatic incidences, you know, by their nature, are very deeply felt. And they absolutely can just become large and can resurface at different times. So, you know, small events can trigger, you know, thoughts about it. I mean, a classic post-traumatic stress disorder of some kind is exactly that. It's where, you know, a trauma from the past is being relived actively, you know, at different stages or different times. So, even 12, you know, it may not necessarily be puberty that's leading to the angry outburst, but certainly if there has been a very significant traumatic incident that's occurred, then it might be that he needs to process it in a different way. It might have just become blocked for him. And of course, we do know that with kids, you know, a lot of anxieties, a lot of stress, a lot of turmoil often gets expressed out as anger. That seems to be, I think, perhaps because it's a very powerful, very passionate way to release feeling. I think, you know, we use it a lot, even if it's not necessarily that we feel angry. We just get angry as a way of expressing a lot of other complicated, difficult feelings.
Lengthy one says, my son is 9 and he's going through a tough time. He only met his father when he was 6 and he was thrilled to have a dad, and I think he imagined a superhero dad. Unfortunately, this was far from reality. His dad, over the past 3 years, has let him down for visits, and weeks would go by without hearing from him. A couple of months ago, my son made the decision not to have a dad in his life and won't speak or see him. It's a decision I'm not too happy about. I'd like him to have a father in his life, but I understand he's trying to protect himself. I've reassured him that he can change his mind at any time, and I'll support him. However he insists, he is happy with his decision. My question is, although he says he's happy, he's been so upset over this, I'm not sure whether to encourage him to see his dad or to allow him to make this seemingly grown-up decision. My fear being, if I do encourage his relationship, his dad won't change, and then I'm setting him up for further hurt. Also, my son is extremely good at expressing his emotions, but I'm wondering, because of how upset he's been, does he need extra support with this, as in counselling, or is he processing things now and it's normal how upset he's been? Very young, nine, isn't it?
Very young, but to be honest, I mean, the mum has just expressed almost everything that you'd be, you know, would consider an issue, you know, and what might be going on there. So I actually think the mum is very well placed herself.
Good.
To support him. I don't necessarily think that she needs to bring him to see anybody else, because she sounds like she's got a really good handle on what might be going on for him. But yes, I mean, I do think that, you know, he's probably better off not entirely, you know, losing contact with his dad, even though, I mean, obviously he had 6 years without his dad. But then, you know, if his dad is unreliable, you know, I mean, it is such a balance, because, yes, you know, in general, it is good to have contact with your dad. It's good for dads to be involved in their kids' lives. But if dads are really inconsistent in that contact, and if their kids can't trust them, can't rely on them, then it can be hurtful, and it can be hurtful every single time. And I guess that's what the mum is concerned about. And I would suggest, look, you know, try and keep the contact going. Do encourage him to see his dad, because I think, you know, when he's, you know, 15, when he's 20, yeah, he may well regret not having had that contact with his dad. And of course, he's only 9.
Why
now.
Is the dad so shit?
Look at
let's face it. Now, that's pretty crappy, isn't it?
But I mean, I think as humans, you know, we have many failings, and I don't think sometimes we just realise just the you know, the role that we have. Once we become a parent, I think, you know, it's easy to sometimes feel that we're just another person in our kids' lives, and we're not. You know, no matter what the situation is, you know, that bond, that connection that we have is so important. And you know, society tells us so much about what parenthood should be and could be, and it gives kids all the same message though as well. And if you look at, you know, how dads are represented, sometimes they're either the buffoon dad,
yeah,
or they're like the super understanding, caring dad. So, you know, it really is kind of, you know, important for kids that you know, that they have their own relationship, they can build their own sense of what dads are. But like, mums and dads are equally important, because mums give us an idea of what, you know, what can women be like in the world. Dads give us an idea of what can men be like in the world.
Yeah.
And so it's important for kids to have that balance, I think, you know, in even if for whatever reason a dad or a mum isn't around, you know, to have a dad figure or a mum figure is equally important. So whether that be a granddad, or whether it be an uncle, or whether it be a, you know, a subsequent friend of the part, you know, of the person, it is important that kids get this balance. And I do think, you know, probably is worth encouraging it, and then, yeah, just really, you know, kind of laying it on the line though with the dad and saying, look, you're effing this up.
You're really, like, if you arranged to meet your nine-year-old son or daughter, whatever it is, on Tuesday at 4 o'clock, and you just don't show up.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah. Or you ring at 3 to say it doesn't suit you all of a sudden.
What? Yeah. Anyway, it baffles me. It baffles me, because it's so hurtful that it makes no sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, even when parents are both together, of course parents can let kids down. You know, I mean, I've made promises to my kids that I can't follow through.
We'll see.
But at least
we'll see. Things you never want your mother or father to say. We'll see. That means no.
But then, you know, the key thing is, though, at least I'm there to make reparation. You know, I can repair that
down
the line. And that's what this dad doesn't have the opportunity to do, because he's not there a lot. Nice. You know, so if he's gonna be involved, he needs to be involved properly. But better involved than not involved.
That's for sure. David, we'll leave it there for today.
All right.
Thank you so much for making the journey to us.
Yeah, I actually feel a bit seasick. Do you know, something wobbles in the wind? Did you know?
People don't know that the things I have seen, the troubles I have seen. This thing wobbles in the wind, but we have Mick here, so he kind of keeps it grounded, because he's our anchor. He's our anchor tenant here. This thing's going nowhere. Mick's sitting there, you're grounded. He's now, if I was here on my own, I'd be like a kite. This thing would be up there, be like Dorothy heading to Oz. You know what I mean?
You could be like one of those flags outside.
I could be like one of those flags. Same height. Same consistency.
Same breath. Yeah.
David Coleman, safe travels back to Killaloo.
Thank you very much.
And we'll talk to you another time, no doubt.
You will indeed.
Okay, bye.